Good evening, and welcome to the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. We made it to a Friday. Yeah. Happy Friday, everybody. We are into August now. We're up to August 3rd of 2018. This is episode 11. Moving on up in the world. Not a whole heck of a lot of crazy news today, which I guess is good. Good and bad. Bad for me because I'm trying to do a podcast, but good for the world because there was less hacks that have been reported, at least today. Just wait. It's not quite the weekend yet, so hackers come out to play on the weekends. But I do have a few cybersecurity-related news, breach-related news to talk about, and a little bit of crypto stuff, kind of cool. My opinions and thoughts on decentralized applications. They're calling them DApps that are being built on the Ethereum and EOS blockchain. So going to kind of talk about those just a little bit today. But first, I want to talk about our sponsor. Yes, we do have a sponsor. Our sponsor is Southern Graphics T-Shirt Company. They do all kinds of T-shirts. Doesn't matter what it is. If you need a custom T-shirt, if you are looking for a pre-made T-shirt that's really funny, you can get those. One of the ones I bought recently was a shirt that says Body by Beer and Tacos, because I have a really, really nice dad bod. So anyway, it's just a sample of some of the funny T-shirts that they've got out there. But go check them out. They can do shirts for your business. They can do shirts for fun, for your team, for your wedding, for whatever occasion that you need. Any kind of, if you're doing a work event and you want to make shirts for your Christmas party for work, you can certainly do that too. So check them out. Their website is southerngraphicst-shirtco.com. Again, southerngraphicst-shirtco.com. Check them out. Got some good stuff out there. So moving right along, we'll jump into some cybersecurity stuff first and move on to the crypto world. I don't know if any of you use Salesforce, but guess what? If you do, some of your data might have been breached by an API issue. Whoops. They say it was just marketing data that was breached due to an API error. Now, I think we talked about it a couple episodes ago about the different ways that Office 365 environments are being compromised and hackers are getting into those. They're getting into those with those APIs. So we're seeing a lot more of these type of, you can almost call it a side channel kind of attack because it's through an API. You know, most people don't use an API. Most people don't even know what an API is. It's typically used for some sort of an integration into another platform or application or whatever. It's just to integrate the two. They use an API. So hackers are now using those APIs to siphon data, to get information. A lot of times you can get some pretty cool information from those. For example, we use an API with some of our security vendors to get or to send our log data and sometimes receive log data from various vendors. And that log data could have some sensitive information in it. So interesting stuff. If you can at all, set any kind of two-factor on your APIs, I would highly recommend it. It's not always doable, and I get it, but if you can, it's always a good countermeasure to these hackers getting into our APIs. So set a two-factor on there if you can, and help mitigate these things and try to get these hackers out of our environments. It's getting pretty crazy with these hacks on the APIs. I haven't really seen this yet. So They're getting crafty. But I thought that was interesting news. I'll post that article in the show notes for everybody to take a look at. And aside from that, I had one other bit of news. I saw Brian Krebs was reporting on some of this stuff. If you don't already follow Brian Krebs on Twitter, and you're a security geek like me, highly recommend following that guy. It's KrebsOnSecurity.com is his website. So he was talking about a credit card issuer by the name of TCM Bank, and they leaked applicants' data for about 16 months. So about a year and a half they had been leaking. You know, you go online, you apply for a credit card or you apply for a loan. Well, all that applicant data they were storing got leaked. Guess what? All your information's out there. I hope that by talking about these on a podcast, that, you know, if anybody actually listens, that you really start to understand how prevalent this is. And if you're a business owner, if you're an executive of any sort, I mean, security needs to be a priority. It's not just securing your data, it's securing your reputation. You know, so this attack happened with a credit card issuer, right? Not the primary bank. So it was a vendor that the bank was using. Now, I've worked in the banking industry a little bit, and I worked with a lot of bankers, specifically around compliance. And, you know, they're required to do all kinds of vendor management and, you know, track and document everything that they possibly can about their vendors and about the vendors' security measures and security testing that those vendors are doing. It is, honestly, I feel sorry for bankers, all the crap they have to go through. It's really a lot of work. Vendor management's not easy. You know, you think about it, if you're a bank and you go calling up your vendor, whatever vendor it is, a technology vendor of some sort, you go calling them up and say, Hey, so-and-so tech vendor, I need to see some security documentation about what you're doing to protect our data. Yeah, that'd be great if you could just send that to me. Yeah. Well, I guess what? They're going to say, no, or they're going to give you a very generic one-page document saying, we secure everything with military-grade encryption and blah, blah, blah. We are the best, and we do everything great. Well, that doesn't exactly tell you anything, right? They don't want to tell you everything because it's a risk for them to tell you all of the security measures that they have in place. If you think about it, if they go and tell you, we're running this brand of firewall, it's this model number, and it has these functions, and that goes into another firewall, which goes into this, into this network, and then we've got another firewall that goes into this network, and, you know, they're not going to give away all that information to their customers, because what if their customer gets hacked? Then a hacker would have a blueprint to that vendor's network or that vendor's security. So it's a very double-edged sword. You know, which way do you go as the vendor and as the person that needs to vet out these vendors and do all this vendor management like banks are required to do now? From they have compliance they have to follow through FFIEC, and really it's a ton of work. You think about just as any business, it doesn't have to be a bank. Any business, think about how many vendors and how many things are outsourced with any business. Just think about that. It is crazy. You can think about like a fast food chain, all the things that they outsource. It is crazy. Or all the vendors they have to buy stuff from. You know, some vendors may be hosting their website or might be providing, I don't know, point of sale systems, whatever it is. In any industry, you've typically got, you know, in some cases, 10 vendors, in some cases, 1,000 vendors. It varies, obviously, depending on the business and the size of the business and all that fun stuff and what you're in business doing. But nonetheless, your vendors are vulnerable. Everybody's vulnerable, really. But if that vendor gets breached, it could lead to a breach in your environment as well. That's the scary part, and that's why the FFIEC guidance for bankers, that's why they require them to do vendor management, is because a lot of times in the banking industry, these vendors are storing extremely critical customer information. You'd really be surprised at some of the stuff that these vendors keep and that the banks outsource. You know, you go into these nice, shiny banks, you think they're doing it all in-house. If it's a community bank, I guarantee you they're not doing all of it in-house. And it's typically, you know, a good portion of what they're doing and all the transactions they're doing. The system that they're doing those transactions on is typically outsourced. So think about that when you go into these banks. You know, the big banks like, you know, Chase, Bank of America, places like that, yeah, they're probably doing it all in-house because they've got, you know, thousands of employees all across the U.S. and they've got the capital to do all this. You know, it requires developers, it requires infrastructure, servers, network admins, I mean, you name it. There's a lot that goes into that and all the transactions that happen. I mean, you can just think about how many times you swipe your credit card a day or your debit card a day. I mean, it's substantial. It really, really is. And that's just you. You know, there's how many people in the U.S.? Now, there you go. Multiply how many times you swipe your card a day by, you know, half the people in the U.S. It's a pretty staggering number of transactions per day. So, getting back to the story, you know, Brian Krebs was reporting on this. The credit card issuer was the one that got compromised. They were leaking applicant data. So anything that you put into an online application was being leaked. And that's what's really scary. You know, you go to all these sites online and you hope that they are secure and you trust that they are secure, but it just takes one misconfiguration. It just takes one little slip up. And before you know it, you are, you know, you're up a creek and it's time to start a new business because your reputation's ruined. So anyway, thought it was an interesting read from Mr. Krebs. So check him out on Twitter. Check out his website. If you don't follow him already, I highly recommend it, especially if you're a security guy or girl. That was really it for the breach news today. So like I said, not a whole lot to report, so that's good. I did see some interesting stuff from we're jumping into crypto stuff now, cryptocurrency and blockchain discussions. There was a really interesting article I saw from the Binance CEO. Binance is a cryptocurrency exchange. And he was saying that, you know, obviously this is his opinion, but, you know, he's extremely knowledgeable about everything crypto and blockchain. So when he says something like this, it makes me wonder. It gets my attention for sure. He said that Ethereum and EOS blockchains are too slow. Now, the Ethereum creator came back and said, yeah, well, we can increase it by 1 million transactions per second, which, you know, sure, I'm sure that's feasible, but, you know, is anybody really, I don't know how easy that would be for them to, you know, increase that speed that quickly. So the Binance CEO is basically saying that there are plenty of other platforms for, you know, decentralized applications that are way, way faster. So I think he was touting Komodo, I believe, was one of them. Their symbol is KMD. And he mentioned one other. I can't remember off the top of my head now, but he mentioned those specifically as being so much faster than Ethereum blockchain. So I thought that was rather interesting. Apparently, Binance is also going to release, supposedly this year, they're going to release their own decentralized exchange. So CryptoBridge already has a decentralized exchange, but Binance is one of the biggest crypto exchanges out there, and they're going to release their own decentralized exchange. So for those of you wondering, what the hell is decentralized mean? Well, it's the easiest way to describe it is think of a bank, for example. How about that? You have a central point where you go and get your money, right? You have to go to that one place to do all your transactions. It has to go to this one place. You either physically have to go there or electronically have to go to that one place to do your transactions, right? So with decentralized, you can do those transactions anywhere. Now, I realize that doesn't make a lot of sense because you can do transactions from your phone and all these other things through your mobile banking app. But I'm specifically referring to exchanging crypto for other crypto. So everybody can have that exchange on their own personal laptop without having to connect, you know, out to an external server. They would be doing the transaction on their own laptop, and from there your laptop would then send the transaction over the internet to all of the other people using that application and update the blockchain, and that updates everybody else's laptop that has this application running. So it's decentralized because it's going to everyone's laptop that has this, or desktop or whatever, that is running this application. It's not going to just one big company where they process everything. It's going to everyone's laptop. And it's decentralized so that the point of failure is not one place. That's a big thing for redundancy in any, you know, any industry, any tech industry. You want things to be redundant. You want things to always be online. You don't want any downtime. Well, if you're centralized and there's, let's say, a denial of service attack on your infrastructure, you're going to have some downtime, and that's not good for your customers, right? But if you're decentralized, there, you know, you can't do a denial of service attack on something that's decentralized because it's on so many different systems. It's next to impossible to do a denial of service attack on something like that. So that's kind of the premise behind decentralized. You really want that uptime, zero downtime mentality. You know, in using blockchain, you can always make sure you've got a fresh copy of the ledger, a fresh copy of all the transactions that have been happening, a fresh copy of all the, you know, the recent prices and price changes and whatnot in crypto. So Binance is going to release it this year, they say. So that's pretty cool stuff. I'm interested to check that out. And Coinbase had some news. They are going to start accepting Ethereum Classic on August the 7th, I believe it was, which is a Tuesday, I think. So next week, Coinbase will be accepting Ethereum Classic. A few weeks back, we talked about they're going to start accepting four or five different coins, and here we go. We're starting with Ethereum Classic. I think that's kind of an interesting choice. I don't know how popular that choice necessarily is. I don't personally use Ethereum Classic that much, and I don't know a lot of people that do. But at least Coinbase is branching out a little bit. I hope that they... You know, they really should look at the top, 15, top 10 or 15 cryptos and have support for those. You know, EOS, Ripple, Stellar, all these, the top 10 or 15, that's where they need to be. And maybe that's the route that they're going. But they're going to start accepting Ethereum Classic. So if you mine for Ethereum Classic, you'll have a new spot to exchange that if you wanted to. So that's cool news for Coinbase. Can't wait to see what else they add down the road. I really hope that they add Ripple, because I like using their platform. Ripple, Stellar, and EOS, I would love to see those on the Coinbase platform. But it's not my call, unfortunately. But if it was me, I'd be putting those on there as quick as I can. That's just more money for them. All the transaction fees that they can charge is just more money for them. So, that's all I had for this Friday. We will talk to you guys next week. Again, check out our sponsor, Southern Graphics T-Shirt Company at southerngraphicst-shirtco.com. Thanks, y'all. Have a good weekend.